Thank you for tuning in to part three of our Youth in Agriculture series. My name is Carrie Robidoux. I'm joined today by my Youth in Ag sidekicks, Joe Rand and Samantha Lahman. This is the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development podcast series. Now, if you've been following our series, you know that our first podcast focused on how generational tensions can divide us, shared experiences connect us on the farm. Second podcast discussed how to communicate with Generation Z specifically when they are working on the farm. And of course, if you haven't tuned into those yet, we would invite you to listen to them. But today we are talking about LGBTQ plus youth in agriculture. Well, Samantha and Joe, here we are again.
We're back.
Glad to be back with you.
Ready or not.
Well, I really appreciate you two joining me for this series. You know that. Also, really excited to learn more about this topic today. And Joe, you're kind of taking the lead on this. One thing I thought I would just mention leading into this, back in our first podcast in this series, I had talked a little bit about how the podcast series was inspired. And it was from a question that I got from a colleague of ours who works in agriculture, the extension, and he had farm producers asking questions in general about working with youth, our Generation Zers, but also specifically we had a question about employing a young person who is part of the LGBTQ plus community, and that farmer had questions about working with that young person. Great relationship. But he wanted to get more information about how to continue to make it a quality place for him to work. So as part of this series, Joe has connected with a former 4-H'er to help us learn more about this.
We thought it would be a great idea to hear directly from someone who is a 4-H alumni and as part of the ag community, grew up in the program, has those experiences, and has since come out to find out firsthand what it was like. I had some conversation with this individual. And so we'll start just with his introduction so you can get to know more about him. And then we go on to talk about what his experience was like in the 4-H program and what he thinks 4-H could do better, what advice he has for employers and especially employers in the ag sector, since he has some of that background within the 4-H program. The things he sees in employers that signal to him that they are safe places to work or they have an eye on diversity and inclusion. And then finally, he talks about what a LGBTQ plus young person might be looking for in a youth program and what 4-H can do better in order to help raise young leaders that are also LGBTQ plus. So that's what the bulk of our conversation is and the bulk of our podcast is today, is listening to him tell his story and then us reflecting on that. All right, so here we go. Let's meet Kyle.
Hi, I'm Kyle Rickman. I was an alumni in the 4-H program. I use he, him pronouns. So in 4-H, I was heavily involved in livestock. So I showed sheep for, I think, 10 years and then also showed dairy cattle for about 2 years when I was younger through my uncle's farm. I was also an ambassador and I dabbled in some fine arts projects, but not a ton. So mainly the livestock industry of 4-H. I was also a Camp Patterson counselor, day camp counselor through the ambassador program through 4-H as well. And then after my 4-H experience was over and I became an alumni, I was also an intern for 2 years as a 4-H intern through the program. And that is when I learned that I really had a passion for youth and working with agriculture and the 4-H program.
So that's Kyle in a nutshell. We then went on to talk a little bit about what he's been doing since he has graduated from high school and 4-H, and what it was like to enter into, to go to college and then to enter into the workforce.
So I went to college for 3 years for elementary education, and then I decided that that wasn't the path for me. So then I went to the University of Minnesota and just recently graduated with a degree in human resources. So now I'm working as a recruiter for a company in Minneapolis.
It's always so exciting to see our alumni 4-H'ers going on to be successful and certainly using those skills that he obviously fine-tuned and honed through 4-H and his intern experience and all of those things that he gained in 4-H.
Yeah. And so then, like I mentioned before, Kyle has come out since he was in the 4-H program. And so I asked him to reflect on that just a little bit.
So as a 4-H'er, I was never an out member of the LGBTQ community. So I came out, I believe, my like sophomore year of college. So I was graduated from the 4-H program. But while I was in 4-H, I do feel like I was accepted at a very like minimal level. Like I was accepted for who the person I was, but I did not feel fully comfortable coming out as a gay member of 4-H. I feel like a lot of people kind of knew that that was what it was, but I never really voiced that opinion and they never really confronted me about it either. But after coming out as gay, I was a 4-H summer intern. And after that experience, I was fairly nervous to come out to 4-H members and or parents and such. But after that, it was more of like I came out, but it wasn't a conversation we had. So it wasn't really brought up more than that, but we kind of like brushed it under the rug and moved on from that experience.
So that notion is really interesting because there's some new research that is coming out that reflects on the experiences specifically of men who were a part of the 4-H program and their experience, and that it was a really positive experience, but they never felt comfortable enough in their own skin to come out, essentially.
What really stood out for me was I was accepted at a minimal level, but he never felt fully comfortable coming out.
And it really stuck with me when he mentions that when he did come out, like he said it, except at the very minimal level, but it was, I'm out, we have, made this announcement and then swept under the rug and just not talked about again. And for me, I think about that reflecting on my own experiences and how I've interacted with people, if I'm slightly uncomfortable, if I'm just not sure what to say and how to respond. I think a lot of times our gut reaction is it's respectful if we just say nothing. If we just don't say anything, that's kind of indicating that we're being supportive. And so, Joe, if you could help me understand what that support can look like from an employer or an organization standpoint, when our youth feel comfortable enough to share this with us, how we should be responding and embracing them.
Well, that's a big question, and I think it's very nuanced and different depending on the young person or employer. What I would say for sure, the first thing at least that I try to respond with, if a young person or another person, doesn't have to be a youth, comes out to me or asks me a question about something related to their gender or sexual orientation is to just say thank you for trusting me with that information. And then the follow-up is, what can I do to support you in this? Because this is really exciting that you are learning more about yourself and that you're comfortable enough to share that. So what can I do to support you? And I think that will inform what those next steps are. And Sam, you're right. I think silence does speak volumes, even if it is well intended. And so not saying anything because you're worried about saying the wrong thing, or you don't want to make it into a big deal and make that young person feel different, or that it is a big deal, can actually be more harmful. So I think it's an important point that you shared, and it's a really great question. But like I said, I think having that conversation with a person or a young person when they do share that information is what's really important.
Thanks, Joe. Knowing that first step and what that means and going to the next one of acknowledging, thank you for telling me. I'm glad that you feel safe communicating that with me, but always having that second follow-up of what can I do to support you? What do you need? How can I help? Having both of those is really the key to kind of, I think, expanding those relationships and those conversations.
I'll also add that another follow-up and an important part of that conversation is how public is this information, especially for us as youth workers? That might be information they feel comfortable sharing with you, or because they trust you, but it may not be information that other young people know, other staff know, or parents know yet, because that process is really hard for young people to try and navigate. And so, understanding and clarifying with them, who knows this? Who can or should I be sharing it with? Or do I keep it to myself? And I'm more than willing to keep it to myself and still be supportive of you. So Kyle actually answered this question too and gave us some really insightful information about his experience. So we'll just take a listen to that now.
I grew up in Hutchinson, Minnesota. So it's a very rural community with conservative values, obviously. And I feel like myself thinking about that situation, it made me feel like I wouldn't be as accepted as I would be if I didn't come out in that space. Also, I think the 4-H could do a lot of different things that involve LGBTQ acceptance and or other identities of acceptance as well, having open conversations about different identities and just being more open to different people's experiences and values.
So just like Kyle, I grew up, not in quite as rural a space, but I do live in one now and understand where he's coming from. And while not everybody in a rural community is conservative and that conservative values don't always play a role in people's beliefs, but sometimes they do. The research does show that the more rural, the smaller the population center, the harder it is for LGBTQ plus young people to exist and thrive. And so it's important that we acknowledge that and acknowledge this firsthand experience of what it was like for Kyle. And also that the 4-H program acknowledges that that's something real and that it's really important that we do some work within community for young people in order to create spaces where youth can be their authentic selves. From here, we pivoted to talking specifically about employment and what Kyle's experience has been since graduating, especially since that's kind of what we've been talking about in this series, is how can we help employers be more inclusive, especially with Gen Zers? And so he talked a little bit about how employers could be more inclusive, what they could do to show their inclusivity, and what helped him feel more welcomed when he was looking for a job.
So I feel like the first thing about being more inclusive is just educating yourself on different people's perspectives and different identities. And also with like looking for employment, I think it's important to look for faces that you would feel comfortable with, whether they have like an LGBTQ inclusive club within the organization that you're applying for, or possibly, I know when I was searching for a job, I looked on their websites and a lot of companies celebrate Pride Month and some don't. So I feel like even though if you're celebrating Pride Month, it doesn't necessarily mean that the place is accepting and they might just be jumping on a bandwagon, but it's better than them not celebrating it. Also, I feel like pronoun usage and inclusive language is a big deal. I know a lot of professionals have their pronouns in their bios when emailing, and that can kind of make it feel like more of a safe place to work as well.
It's really interesting to hear Kyle talk about these things because they're the same safety signals, the same methods and strategies for being inclusive that we talk about within youth development programs and that I've written about before and that I talked to colleagues about that we have talked about. Understanding that some of those things are universal, no matter what we're talking about, what organization, what age, but being respectful of who people are, their pronouns, how you can make them feel more included and a part of the organization is really something that we can glean from no matter our conversation.
If there's anybody listening who hasn't worked with pronouns or not fully understanding what that means, can you explain how you express your pronoun and where you might use that?
Sure. So pronouns are the way we refer to people when they're not in our conversation, in our immediate conversation, or when they're not in the room. Pronouns have a gender attached to them. So examples of pronouns are he, him, or she, her, or they, them. Those are the most common, but that's definitely not an exhaustive list. Pronouns are really important because they take the place of our name. And so as much as you have an emotional connection, positive or negative, to your name, people have that same connection to their pronouns. And so a person who identifies as male, but maybe wasn't born or assigned biologically as male at birth, might use the pronouns he, him. You might look at that person and make an assumption about their pronouns that might be incorrect. And so it's really important that we're in tune with that, at least are trying to be in tune with that. So one of the ways people indicate their pronouns or share with people or allow people the opportunity to share their pronouns is through an email signature, just like Kyle referenced here. When you're in conversation with people, the easiest way to do that is to offer your own pronouns first. So when I introduce myself to people, I will often say, my name is Joe. I use pronouns he, him. You can also ask, although sometimes that can be a little awkward, but there's nothing wrong with asking, just to make sure that you are being respectful of the other person. And so that might be, hi, my name's Joe. I use pronouns he, him. What pronouns would you prefer I use?
So you can ask the question, but even, I mean, I think what is helpful for youth workers wanting to be more inclusive is that as a step towards telling all young people that I'm a safe place to come and talk to about that, if you want to share what your pronoun is.
Yeah, and that you've had some education in and that you value being inclusive of LGBTQ plus people or people with diverse genders. Absolutely. And I misspoke a minute ago. We don't refer to them as preferred pronouns. So you wouldn't want to ask someone's preferred pronouns. You would just say, what pronouns should I use? We all screw up all the time, and I still screw up.
I know. I was lucky enough when I first started with Extension here in Minnesota, I got the opportunity to attend a training that was put on by Joe. And that was really my first any sort of formal education that I had received regarding, you know, like pronouns, using the proper terms for different people within LGBTQ+. And after that training, how much more I saw when I walk into a business looking at job postings, anything, emails that are communicated back and forth, I will immediately notice if they have their pronouns listed at the bottom of their email signature line. Or perhaps it's a poster in the corner of an office that says like, all are welcome. And it's across a pride flag. It's those little things that I never noticed before, but I can only imagine or try to understand what it would be like for somebody in that community to see those little bits of acceptance or awareness or, you know, those methods of I'm trying to educate myself. I'm trying to learn more.
Yeah, so Kyle also offered some insight into what it's like to be in the workforce and to be able to have conversation about his boyfriend. So we'll hear that now.
I am currently in a relationship and I've been in a relationship with him for 2 years. And at my current employer in the cities, I feel very comfortable bringing that up. And the first time I brought it up, it wasn't like people were asking questions. It was just like a casual conversation around it. And they're not afraid to ask me like how my boyfriend's doing. And they don't make it feel like an awkward exchange of conversation. And they just kind of make it feel like a natural thing because it is.
Because it is.
And that's the reality. And the reality is not every employer or place of employment is like that, but it's important for employers to create an environment where that is the reality. Just like we've been discussing in the workforce, how we can be more inclusive. We also know that it's important for youth development programs to be inclusive. And so we talked to Kyle about that as well, just to get his insight on what youth development programs could do in general, but then also specifically what 4-H could do to ensure a welcoming environment for LGBTQ plus young people.
The first thing a young queer person would be looking for in 4-H is what all other youth are looking for, and that's probably acceptance, whether that be for their gender expression, sexual orientation, or just who they are as a person in general, I think would be the first thing. Obviously, it's important for all youth to get to grow in a leadership role, but I think specifically for LGBTQ youth, it's super important to allow them to branch out and feel comfortable in their own skin and to kind of start growing in themselves and becoming a leader for who they really are as a person.
Which is exactly what we want to do within the 4-H program, is allow people to reach their potential, to grow as leaders. And so what can we do to make sure that we're doing that for all our young people, but especially for marginalized young people like the LGBTQ plus community? So then I asked Kyle just to give us a summary of what we talked about today, what he thought we should know about working with Gen Z and LGBTQ plus youth.
starts with educating yourself on the background of Gen Z, whether that be their work habits or more inclusive behavior. Another thing is being open and honest about whether that be pronouns or whether that be your experiences, and being able to have open conversation around your experiences you've had as a person, and able to just have that open communication. Youth programming, like integrating more inclusive curriculum, listening to different perspectives and experiences at all levels of like 4-H programming. But I think it's important to stand up against homophobia and use inclusive language throughout the entire 4-H program to kind of end that stigma around non-inclusive behavior.
And I think we're starting to do that. I'm a part of a national committee that developed some practices for inclusion of people of all gender identities and sexual orientations within the 4-H Youth Development Program. And those are strategies we can use within our local programs to make sure that environments like camp, overnight experiences, clubs, et cetera, are being inclusive for our LGBTQ plus young people. So what can we change? What can we do to educate ourselves? And specifically within Minnesota 4-H, we're doing this work as well and educating our staff and starting to incorporate some of the practices into programs that already exist. So thinking about where can we use pronouns in order to signal that this is an inclusive environment? Where can we have conversations about gender identity and sexual orientation so that young people feel like they can be their authentic selves in our programs?
So when I reflect back over the interview and that conversation that has taken place, that new awareness to some of the things that he experienced going through 4-H and then into the workforce, I think one of the things I definitely take away is it's not enough to just be silently inclusive or silently supportive, but how can we outwardly make sure that we are showing support, we are inviting youth into our programs and letting them know that this is a safe space. This is a place where we're going to work to make sure you feel like you belong, that you are accepted, so that we can make it a positive experience. Because if you don't feel that connectedness, that acceptance, certainly it makes it much more difficult to get to the places that we want them to experience. And with youth leadership, those life skills, those career development opportunities, those are all things that we do after we have that feeling of inclusion and safety.
Well, I'm thinking back to the original question and the reason for this conversation today, that employer, the farmer who wanted to make sure that they were providing a welcoming, inclusive environment for their LGBTQ plus employee. That's the difference between an employee you have for a day or an employee you have for years, and how dedicated they are. And that has a direct impact on your business and your livelihood and the farm. And so making sure that not only as youth development professionals, we are educated, but then also helping folks we work with in rural communities, helping them become more inclusive so they can both attract Gen Zers as employees, but then also retain those employees and build relationships with those young people.
And kudos to that farmer for taking that first step to educate himself.
Yeah, because that's not an easy thing to do. And it can be really scary, and it can be a totally new thing, but taking that first step is really important, and knowing that we're all going to screw up, that everybody screws up, but we learn from those mistakes. And if you're genuine about that intent and you own your mistakes and you do better the next time, not just try to do better, but you do better, that it makes all the difference. Before we go, I'll just mention, if you need more tools or want to read more, in addition to our podcast series, there's a series of blogs on our Youth Development Insight blog, including one that I recently published about inclusion in ag. And so give that a read. We also have some tools on our website where you can learn more about definitions, about pronouns, or absolutely feel free to reach out and we can have more conversation.
Thank you for listening in on the third podcast of our series on youth and agriculture. It's been a pleasure to do this series with you, Joe and Samantha.
Thank you for having me, Carrie. It's always great to be on.
Thanks for tackling this important subject, Carrie and Sam. Special thanks to Kyle for being willing to have this conversation also.
Yeah, I really learned a lot from him today, and I appreciate that he's willing to share his experience with us so that we can learn and do better in our work with LGBTQ youth in rural areas. Now, please tune in to our next podcast as Allie Kleckner joins Samantha and myself for a very important conversation about rural youth and stress. In the meantime, go to our website at www.extension.umn.edu/youth. You will find research-based information and training opportunities for youth development professionals and volunteers. Also, look in the description of this podcast. I will put links in there for the resources that Joe mentioned earlier. Thank you both again for joining me in this podcast. This is Carrie Rabideau from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.